This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 271, brought to you by C2E2, audible.com. Go to audiblepodcast.com/iFanboy for your free audiobook today, and iFanboy listeners like you. And welcome to iFanboy.com's Pick of the Week podcast, episode 271. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Well, hello, Connor.
And Josh Flanagan.
Sup?
We three are iFanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us, they pick the best one. They write about it on the website. They talk about the podcast as well as other books of the week, other topics of interest, emails, voicemails, all kinds of fun stuff. So come along on this joyous occasion, won't you? Come with us.
It's a fantastic voyage is what it is.
Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning, it's a review show. We're going to talk about the books of the week. There'll be spoilers. There's a couple of big things that happened this week. We'll definitely be spoiling them. So if you didn't read your books, come back later. It'll be more fun for everyone.
Please tell me you're talking about the big things that happened in Star Trek Infestation.
There's a couple of things that happened.
Oh, I can't wait.
We'll get to that soon. Soon enough. Hold your horses, Ron. Before that, we're going to get to Josh's pick of the week, which was...
Knight and Squire number 5, which you've already turned into an afterthought.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
I'd like to notice how quickly I get undercut.
No.
Last time I did Hellblazer, it was just like, yeah, so Josh, talk for 10 minutes. We're going to go make coffee.
No. That's
it wasn't coffee. I read a magazine.
You don't want to know what I did.
You jerked off?
Oh, come on. It's better unsaid.
See, no, that well, I took it a different. Anyway, pick of the week was Knight and Squire number 5, and... You know, this was one of those things where I actually read a lot of good books. There was a lot of things that I
great
gave.
Week. Great week.
Yeah, it was. I gave a lot of fives to things, and like, I had to really think about what I wanted to be the pick of the week. And this is almost, this issue was fantastic, but it was amplified by the fact that it just fits so well in the scope of the miniseries so far. It's a 6-issue miniseries. These are spin-off characters from Grant Morrison's run. I still don't know. Like, are they old characters? Are they legacy characters?
You mean Knight and Squire themselves?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, now, I'm not a Batman guy, but I think they're new. Didn't Grant Morrison create them?
Well, that's the thing. What was it? The League of in the Grant Morrison story. It was all those other weird characters that then later go on to become Batman Inc. You know, the Argentinian and the Japanese characters. And Knight and Squire were part of that. And then from this, we talked to Cornell in San Diego and Connor spoke to him and Cornell said, oh, well, my mandate is to make this book as British as possible. And 4 issues into it, he did. He succeeded. You know, mission accomplished. But what he'd done was, it doesn't matter to me if these are legacy characters or not, because it feels like it. It's almost like a trick. Like, and there's a billion characters in this, and as you read through it, you're
just
like...
According to this, I just looked him up. Knight is a legacy character himself. The original Knight appeared in 1951. This current Knight, Cyril Sheldrake, is from 1999.
That's awesome. That's a great name.
Right.
Grant Morrison did create the current one.
Right.
Create the original one.
I like the idea that it's showed you that, like, in the DC universe, you can go in and create some character in a way that and be like, oh no, this Kiss character's been around forever, and you just sort of like insinuate them. And most people haven't been reading for 30-40 years, so they don't know. And you could just do that as opposed, you could do it wrong also, it's called a century. But the way that these work is a little different. And the thing is, through the whole series, it's a pretty lighthearted series. It's been sort of funny and sort of wacky, and it required like a glossary at the back to explain to us Americans what the hell they're talking about. And the thing that was, and I guess this is a spoiler, if you haven't read it, this could kind of, I guess, wreck the surprise of it. But the thing with this is that two-thirds of the way through this one, all of a sudden, they drop the hammer and the Joker shows up, the real Joker, because the whole thing is about Jarvis Poker, the British Joker. Who's a good guy, and everyone, you know, he's kind of a bad guy, but everyone, you know, no, he's it's all in good fun. He's no real harm, and everyone kind of likes him because, you know, all the British superheroes in this are just sort of, they've sort of accepted their lot that they're never going to be, you know, the Justice League characters, and it's sort of an undercurrent of the whole series. And then the Joker shows up and he shoots another character right in the head right away, and all of a sudden everything is sucked down to ground level, and it's like the iris of the focus of the camera just sharpens up, and you're like, nope, this is the real world now. All this silly stuff, they have to deal with something real. And it was a really nice story twist. It was a really good just moment that I didn't see coming, and it you know, pushes you off a ledge that you didn't know was behind you, I guess.
Ron, you're not reading this, are you? Okay, well, I think that was maybe the best moment of the week. It was a true holy shit moment. Like, I didn't read this until I saw you made the pick, so I read it first. Right. And I didn't read your review. I just saw that you made it the pick.
Good call.
And so I'm reading it, and I turn the page. You know, you get to that moment where the Joker shows up. You turn the page, and he's standing there with his gun. And I literally went, holy shit. He shoots the guy in the face, and then you're right. Cornell lulled us into this false sense of security with this series where – oh, it's a nice little wacky, charming little British book about how the British superheroes and villains are all just kind of nice. They're just sort of pale imitations of the Americans. And it's
just a bit fun. That's all.
Sort of commentary on the relationship between American comics and British comics and that sort of thing. So we go along 5 issues with that in our heads that this is all fun. And the point of this issue was that the Joker, the British Joker, is dying of cancer. And so he's going to pull one last big caper. And the Knight and Squire are kind of letting him do it. They're kind of not getting in the way. They want to go out on a high note. And then in the middle of the caper, the real Joker shows up and shoots this other guy in the head and basically tells the British Joker that he's had enough of this guy ruining his reputation. And that's the moment where I was like, oh, he got us. And the sad thing is a lot of people jumped off the book because they thought it was just like a lighthearted, you know.
Yes.
Lighthearted series of humor book. And really what he did was he set us up and he's knocking us down with this,
yeah,
with this
issue. And I get that. Like, I was like, it's fun, but I don't feel like I need to read it. It wasn't totally. But as a whole piece, right now I can see. And this is one of those things, like with certain writers, you just should learn to trust them.
Yep.
You know, and that's why I didn't get off, you know. But, I was having fun with it, but I could have taken it or leave it. But as a whole thing, obviously I made it the pick of the week. You know, like at the beginning, you've got Poker and he's in the doctor's office. And the first shot of the book it's this huge cinematic shot from way above this giant hospital building. And he pushes in. I'm going to talk about Broxton's art in just a second. And the Joker and the doctor's being deadly serious. And the Joker's just making, or British Joker's making these silly jokes. And like that's sort of the tone that is foreshadowed, I guess, because after that it goes back to the lighthearted stuff, and because the doctor's playing it completely straight, and he's like, well, there's all sorts of things, and the British Joker's just making, you know, stupid little comments and things like that, and it sort of foreshadows what's going to happen. And this was the issue, really, that not only did Paul Cornell sort of set us up and knock us down, but Jimmy Broxton did too. Now he's a guy who, from the Word Balloon podcast that John Sundress did with Paul Cornell, I learned that Broxton's been around for a long time. He does inking. He has other names that he does work under, but he's been around for a really long time. And it's pretty good. If you look at all the stuff with Knight and Squire themselves, most of the issues before this, they've been pretty cartoony, not a lot of details, and like very smooth, straight lines. And then it just sort of, every time you see Poker, it comes into, you know, like, it just is a little more detailed and a little more realistic. And then by the time the Joker shows up, you get these beautiful shots on top of London Bridge, and it just, like, the tone of it just changes slightly. Like, all the lines around Joker's face and the way that they're drawn, you know, the gun and all of those things are very much more real than they had felt before. Before it was a little more technicolor. And that worked really too. I was really impressed by the work that Broxton did on this issue specifically.
This was real good. I think this is, again,
it's the trend now to write for the whole, and this is sort of the series where if you're not reading the whole story, you're not going to get the arc. I mean, people who just pick this issue up are not going to get – they're not going to get the full impact of going along for 5 months in a certain tone and having that tone totally evaporate. It was kind of like the record scratch or the air getting sucked out of the room.
Yeah. I actually had the term record scratch in my review and took it out, but like it's definitely was
And
that.
It's only going to get worse because the guy that the Joker kills is Squire's boyfriend, so – they're not going to be able to escape the reality of this situation, which is going to be very interesting. It was very, very good. I've loved this whole series. I've liked the comedic tone of it. And
I had fun with it. I was pretty good. Like I enjoyed it, but I wasn't compelled to read it. You know, I wasn't riveted. But this really showed me what was actually going on, and I was fantastic. And again, like you're right, don't go out and buy this one issue. There's just no point.
Yeah,
you know. So,
it's the fifth of a 6-part series, so you're not going to get the full impact of it.
And also, like, how about setting you up for being excited about a 6th part?
Yes. No, I can't wait to get to this. I literally said holy shit out loud when I turned the page because that's how great that moment. It was perfectly choreographed. Yeah. And Ron, we were talking last week about the page turning.
Yes.
And it was totally that turn the page, there's the Joker.
The reveal, as it's called.
Yeah. And it was like the reveal was a little foreshadowed on the page before because you kind of saw a sleeve and I was like, is that joke?
But even then, I just, you're right, because he did such a good job of taking us out of the DCU in our heads that even then I didn't think that. I was like, oh, someone's dressed like him. Mm-hmm. Not thinking, of course, it's the Joker because he's dressed like the Joker.
But
so
then not only does the Joker show up, because that's an old comic book trick, you know, like Joker's on the page, Punisher's on the page, whoever. Then immediately, just to underline that fact, he shoots that other character in the head who we've gotten to know for the past two issues. Because you begin to think there are no consequences for these characters. Like, oh, we're just going to play around. And it was great. And it was like, from an overall standpoint, like there wasn't a more satisfying book I read this week.
Right. Well, Batman and Robin 20, I thought, was another one of the great books that came out this week. It's Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason's first issue on Batman and Robin. They were the announced team, and Paul Cornell came in for an arc before them. This is interesting because Tomasi wrote the Nightwing series, so there's a lot of history with the characters here, and he did a really good job with that. And it's funny because as time goes on, these Batman books, you have to sort of give the writers a lot of leeway because none of them are going to be Grant Morrison as great as they are, so... things will change slightly. I noticed in this issue that Tomasi wrote a Damian that was very much more like a punk kid rather than an aristocratic punk kid.
I noticed that too. I didn't like that. That kind of threw me off.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, it's just not the same characterization. Mm. There was a scene, I think, in the autopsy.
Mortuary. No.
He says, my bad, which I wouldn't think that he would say.
I actually didn't like that he was sitting there listening to like an iPod. I was like, I don't feel like he'd do that. Like he'd be reading something really snobbish and, you know.
And also the idea that Dick pulled the same disappearing stunt on Gordon was something that was established in the Morrison book that's not happening anymore. But that put that stuff aside, and Tomasi has a really good handle on these characters, especially the opening scene, which was a sort of callback to the end of his Nightwing run, which was the same scene as before where Dick and Tim and Alfred were getting together to watch a movie, making smoothies, just sort of doing stuff families do. And in this scene, you know, Bruce steps into the middle. So now that the whole family's back together, it was a really nice way to open the series, I thought. And to take away the stuff that's not really Morrison-esque, which you just sort of have to deal with, I thought it was fantastic. I really liked it. I thought Gleason's style was a little different than he did in Green Lantern Corps, and I thought Tomasi really knows these characters, and it was a really fun. Just little bits like Dick being really acrobatic and looking for clues and sort of overdoing stuff. He didn't need to like spin around on the gargoyle. That stuff was really strong. I thought it was really fun.
That sort of second-to-last page is not quite a double-page spread, but it's when the Man-Bat sort of blasts and the coloring has everything sort of glowing with all the little bats, and it sort of rains down and they fall. That's a really nice page. I'm looking at that right now. Like, and just from everybody's standpoint, from penciler, inker to the colorist, it was really nice. I like the glowing effect a lot. It's cool. Yep. I don't know what's going to happen. So it feels like a classic sort of Batman tale, but no, the characterizations being off threw me off just because
It's tough, though. If you read as many Batman books as I do, you realize it's just you have to kind of...
I know, but the one thing about Damian is that I'm enjoying his ride, his sort of development, and I don't like being pulled backwards the other way. I don't know.
It's really the only book that happens is when Morrison's writing him.
Well, what's going to happen is that he's going to be one of those characters that is going to start to show up more because he's popular, which is ironic because everyone hated him at first. And the more people get their hands on it, the more there's going to be people who just don't have the right handle on it because it's very specific. It's very, like, to get it right, you've got to.
He was in Red Robin this week. He was in Batgirl last week. I mean, he's already all over the place. It's just, I would say one out of three times is he written, you know, the way he really should be. But you kind of have to just deal with that.
Yeah.
And you know what else was awesome this week? Was 1950s Howard Chaykin Nick Fury in the Cuba action.
I was going to say, are we done with Batman? Can we talk about the awesomeness? We'll
circle back around in a bit.
So when I got New Avengers number 9, and first on the cover I saw Nick Fury, and I'm like, ooh, Nick Fury, because I don't know why. The fact that Nick Fury's been off the playing the board, like off the chessboard, has made me like kind of miss him. Like I get excited when I see him, and especially like the stuff that's going on in Secret Avengers has totally had me. Totally, totally had me. But I open this and I see Chaykin, and I'm like, yes, Chaykin. And then Chaykin in 1959, it just gets better. And then it's Diodato in the middle.
Yeah, but it was Chaykin in 59 in Cuba with the adventures of Nick Fury post-war hunting down Nazis.
Which was awesome. And brutally killing Nazis.
Yes.
Which is fine, I guess.
Diodato on the cover was actually why I didn't buy it. I was like, I'm not doing that.
I don't think Diodato did the cover.
Garney. His name.
Oh, his name. Oh,
like his name.
Yeah.
I was like, all right,
through this that you like want to be like, I'm done with Avengers, and you're just, it's awesome, and you're missing it. It's like,
okay. I don't. It's fine. I don't feel like I'm missing it.
Oh well,
okay.
I mean, because it's this actually, I really enjoyed this issue a lot. I mean, you had the flashback to Fury in 1959, then to the present day with the New Avengers being a bit more proactive and, you know, breaking up something that might be happening before it can start, which was, and like chaotic, like. What I like about this Avengers team is that they kind of trip all over each other, you know, like they haven't really, you know, like they're sitting up there watching, you know, they're watching all this equipment get unloaded, and they know who's in there and they know who the villain is. And they get into an argument over whether or not they should wait until they do something or strike, you know, strike first. And like, I thought that was a good conversation to see happen. But then, of course, the thing just jumps right into it and starts breaking things. But then again, the humor continues, you know, like there are these trucks of all these equipment. And so Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Iron Fist go to drive the trucks away, and Luke can't start his truck. So he just goes out and picks it up. Like, which is, I was like, oh, that's cool.
Iron Fist doesn't have a license because he's a New Yorker.
Yeah, exactly. He never needed one. It was like, but yeah, and then it ends with it goes back to 1959, and it looks like we get our first taste of the Marvel movies working its way into the 616.
Yeah,
because at the very end of it, Nick Fury's there drinking in Cuba, and somebody from his handler, I guess, is coming to, you know, or whoever he works for is coming to tell him to go talk to the president because the president wants to talk about the Avengers initiative.
Yeah, which is inevitable. All this stuff was inevitably going to get moved into the comics. But and also Mockingbird got shot in the gut, which we didn't even talk about. But I thought this was a great issue. Again.
Yeah, it was good. It was a lot of fun. And honestly, I didn't mind the Diodato art that much. It didn't bother me. I mean, it wasn't as bad as Acuna. I mean, you know.
It wasn't as good as Acuna, is what you meant to say.
That's relative.
See, yeah, exactly. It's relative. What did kind of freak me out, Connor, was when they're staking out the store, the things and things. Like, that's just a photo.
Yeah.
That was weird. That threw me off. But other than that, it was fine.
And it was all worth it for the old school Chaykin Cuba action.
Oh, man, give me the whole issue by Chaykin. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah. It'll sell great.
Now we continue on with the infestation storyline. Now we're in Star Trek world where,
yay!
Josh, did you buy this?
You know what? I started to read this, got distracted, put it down, and I forgot to finish it. But I was looking forward to it. I was like, this is nuts.
The setup for this is now the invasion has moved to the new Star Trek world, and in this issue, Kirk and Spock and Bones and three red shirts are headed off to a planet in a shuttle. Bones is getting an award for his work with the Frontier Doctors,
and
Enterprise is going off to some other planet to refuel while they're off there. So they're all alone in this shuttle, and they're going to the planet, and they get no response from their hails. There's no one. No one's responding to them at all. They're not really getting any life readings either, which is bizarre. So they land on the planet and nobody's around. They find a dead body, which gives the great scene of Bones, you know, getting his tricorder out and scanning the body, and he goes, "He's dead, Jim." Cut to this zombie going, "Rah, brain." basically the rest of the issue is spent running from these zombies while one by one the red shirts all die or fall to the zombies, and it's left to Kirk, Spock, and Bones to escape. In the end of the issue, they're holed up in this building and they're going to figure out a way to escape because they can't get out. They can't get beamed out because the Enterprise is gone. They're running low on materials. They've only got their phasers and
stone knives and bearskins.
So it's just this has just been such goofy, wacky fun. I've been loving this.
Oh man, I might have to go back and pick all this stuff up. It just seems so goofy. I really like
Bones.
It,
yeah. Isn't there anything that? Damn it, Jim! I don't even know what we're dealing with yet.
Oh. Yeah, actually, I thought who wrote it was Abbott Lanning.
Yeah, no, Adam Lanning are doing it. Yeah,
Erskine was the artist, who's great, and he did Dan Dare. And then I thought the voices were really solid in terms of the three.
I might need to go back and pick all these up. It's also
Scott Tipton and David Tipton wrote it, and they did, they got the voices totally down.
So it's just so far it's been Star Trek, and it's been the one that's been the prologue where they didn't have any of the characters in it, right?
And Transformers.
And Transformers.
How and was each one is only two issues. Each
was little. Transformers any good?
We talked about it last week. Ron.
Oh right, yeah, I remember that now. Okay, yeah, okay. It's been a long week.
I understand. But fun. It was, you know, all worth it for the he's dead, Jim. Rawr!
Oh, this is brilliant. Ah. It writes itself. It's great.
Am I not the only one reading Thunder Agents now? Because I was the only one
reading Thunder Agents.
No, I am reading Thunder Agents, yeah.
In not reading the Avengers books, I'm making an effort to read some other things. And this was one of the ones that I picked up. And it's pretty damn good. I was really impressed.
Thunder Agents sort of, is its best book. Nick Spencer's.
Yeah. I was just really impressed by sort of the structuring of everything. It's just a little off from what you expect, but also sort of classic at the same time.
I really like it. And you throw in a little George Perez opening kind of flashback, kind of stage setting sequence. That's a good way to start the book.
Yep.
The only way it could be better would be if it was Chaykin. But
that was last issue. Was Chaykin.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Actually, you're right. It was. Yeah, I forgot.
I really liked the, I don't know anybody's name, but like the salesman-y young guy.
Toby. He's great. He's great.
He gave that whole speech. And then at the end, he was like, wait, did you think I like you?
Yeah.
And he's like, no. Look, it worked. You know,
yeah.
The guy just. That was fantastic. I was like, that's very good.
And also, if you've been reading this the whole way through, then there's the twist at the end where he may be a bad guy. And so that's even more because we've been getting to know him for four issues. I think it's strong.
Here's the thing about this, though, is that I knew of the Thunder Agents. You know, like I knew of the characters, but I didn't know anything about them. I didn't read the classic stuff. I didn't know the history stuff. But I after reading the Perez opener and just stuff like that, I think it's really cool. It's a great concept. They've got the fact that they've got this belt and the helmet and the key things that carry through for each character. This has got the makings of being something that could be really, really cool.
Yes, it does. It does.
I like it. I dig it. And honestly, I think this is one of the strongest things Spencer's writing currently right now.
It is. I've been enjoying most of everything he's doing, but this is his best book, I think, Thunder Agents.
Yeah.
So jump on it. It's not too late. Only four issues.
No, you could totally jump on it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Even with this issue, you can basically it opens up with explaining what's happening, so you can basically get number four.
I didn't read number one. I started two and three.
Yeah, no. Each issue is very one and done-y, kind of. Like there's something there's an overarching story that's happening, but they're flashing back to it's basically each issue is focused on an individual member of the Thunder Agents,
and you can get the gist.
Exactly. So Justice League Generation Lost continues DC's assault on its minority characters.
Well, first of all, the cover was just fantastic.
The cover was amazing,
The stark, no detail, outline cover, which Paul featured in the Best Cover of the Week feature on iFanboy. Just a wonderful cover.
Yeah, but so in this issue, we get a little bit of deja vu as Max Lord shoots Blue Beetle in the head.
He's not dead. He's not dead.
You don't think so? He looks pretty dead.
He's not dead. Jamie Reyes is one of their characters they're pushing. He's going to be on Smallville.
They did that whole animatic with the scarab.
He's not dead. He wears an armored suit that repairs itself.
That one full page splash of the shot.
Yeah.
With the little Kennedy headpieces coming out like that. It got me. It got me. Like I was like, ooh, ow, and then it brings up all these Ted Kord memories. It definitely hit on the right note. Whether or not he is dead or not, we'll see. I mean, I guess
maybe. This is a wonderful series. I mean, we're nearing the end. We've got a couple issues left. One of the reasons why it's so emotional when it gets shot is because the other Leaguers witness it through a glass window, like Kirk and Spock. They can't get through. And that it makes it more emotional because they've been coming together as a team over this.
I do not want this series to ever end.
I know. I just wish they could sort of take the Generation Lost bit off, move in of America, and just continue.
Yeah, or just even have it add international. Let these characters exist. They're so much fun together, and this has been great. And this is like 19 issues of chasing Max Lord as a villain, and it's not getting old. You know,
what's funny is I just recently read the Justice League International Volume 5 trade, which came out, which came out in soft cover because they stopped doing the hardcovers.
They ditched the hardcovers. So I committed to the hardcovers, and they ditched it, didn't they?
So Volume 5 was the beginning of Justice League Europe. I remember why I hate Captain Atom, because he was a whiny little bitch in that book. He's not the same character that he is now. And I was reading it going, oh, somebody punch him. Remember Bart Sears? That was a great series.
Yeah. It was.
So, I actually think I bought that series when it was coming out.
I didn't.
Everybody had huge, huge hair.
But, oh, man, can you imagine if Blue Beetle actually is dead?
If he's dead, I'll give him credit, but there's just no way.
No, if he's dead, it's like I'm waiting for the internet masses to rise up. But first the atom and now this. And, yeah. But, no, that's why I think he's not dead.
Well, there's many reasons why I think he's dead. But,
Anyway. All right, so now's the time that I should go la 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 la.
I'll do my best. Also, Walking Dead's kind of the same thing all the way through.
That's true.
I mean, there's not.
Are their lives in danger and then they barely escape?
Wait a minute. Are there zombies and then someone that I care about dies?
Yeah, someone gets bit.
Oh, shit.
That's kind of how it works. Or somebody.
Don't tell me.
Or two guys that you thought were friends, one of them kills the other one.
It took 81 issues for us to figure this out.
So what happens is we're going to move along and move along and move along. It's going to be all sorts of dangerous stuff. And then we'll get to a place and it goes, hey, this is really scary. And then it's going to be like, you know what? Actually, it's pretty good here. It's pretty safe. Hey, what's going on outside? Well, we'll be fine if crack. Oh, and so on. That's where we are now. If you've been seeing
it sounds like we're making fun of it, but we're not.
I don't know, because the thing is, it's just as compelling all the way through, 81 issues in. This is a 5-star book. This was almost pick of the week also. This is the no way out thing. They basically they all found their way into like a little town and they built – no, stop. They built walls around it. What do you think happens? It's called No Way Out. Jesus. And they form some new relationships with the people there. So those people are fucking chum. And the zombies start breaking through and they're all pushing on the walls and there's like that you know sort of you know that Jurassic Park feeling that crack he's out there you know like and there's a ton of zombies and someone gets laid and
there should be a scene where Rick is on top of the wall with one of the townspeople in his arms and he tosses him over and says why don't you come chum some of this shit.
Jesus.
Oh, that's the best cut ever. Anyway, you know, it was all those things that are done well in a Walking Dead book. This story is starting to hit its stride and its crescendo, and they're like the safety of this place is blown again, and everybody who felt like they had some security, you know, they can have all of their fears realized once again and screw up their psyches even further. And a couple of things happen with the sort of main characters and that were really good and good development. And Andrea is like a total badass now, which is really fun. So she had a really good moment. Just like another really good one, like 81 issues in. And damn, you know, it's kind of amazing.
Cool. Well, I'm glad that it's good and whatever. Didn't spoil it for me. Real quickly, I bought Onslaught Unleashed number one.
Oh, totally. Me too. Wait.
Because why not? Because you know what we need in the Marvel Universe is another Onslaught story. But this is written, but I thought it was interesting though because it was written by Sean McKeever and the art was Felipe Andrade, and the art really reminded me of like early Scotty Young. Early when he did New Warriors, like before he kind of got his before Scotty Young got his groove back, but before he got the look that he's been doing now. Also, what's his name? Nomura, I Kill Giants guy.
J.M. Kim Nomura, the third.
Like a cross between him and Scotty Young. Really kinetic, really energetic, really good art. I mean, I really enjoyed it. And it fixes.
Is Onslaught still Professor X?
No. Now it's so Sean McKeever's writing it, and it picks up. It's picking up out of the Nomad story that's going on in the background of Captain America, and which I think is the precursor to what he's doing with Mike Norton now. The Fear Itself thing, because this has got this has got Nomad and it's got Firestar and it's got Gravity and all those kind of younger characters, and basically Onslaught comes back in Nomad basically, so now Nomad is Onslaught. There you have
fantastic.
It. Yep, there you have it. But you know.
Sponsor break.
You can't make this stuff up. So C2E2 is approaching. It's coming back to downtown Chicago. The Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, or C2E2 as it's affectionately known, going to be from March 18th to March 20th in Chicago, right after St. Patrick's Day. You can stumble along into the West Building at the McCormick Place in downtown Chicago, and they've got a much more fan-friendly layout to the show, which now every time I read, I think of Tom.
The horrors. I had no idea it was that dangerous. I must have missed all that last year. Tom was talking about like boiling oil and stuff.
Crazy. But if you are in the flyover states and you want to go to a comic book convention, C2E2 is the one that you should be going to. They've got a ton of special guests coming. The ones that they've announced that we've been talking about already on the show, like Brian Michael Bendis and Adam Hughes and Ben Tubblesmith and Cliff Chang and Mahmoud Asrar and Paul Cornell and Mike Norton, Scotty Young, Scott Snyder. But they also announced a whole bunch of new ones, you know, like Matt Fraction, Joe Quesada, Garth Ennis, So it's coming together to be a pretty good show. Yeah. So go to C2E2.com and you can check out every week they're announcing more cool stuff and more guests and things like that. So you don't want to miss out on anything. And if you order your tickets online at C2E2.com and buy them before March 14th, you can get the whole weekend, access to the whole weekend for just $50, which is quite a deal across 3 days. Not bad. Bill Willingham's going to be there. It's going to be crazy. So C2E2 in downtown Chicago at the McCormick Place in the West Building. Find out more at C2E2.com, and we will see you there. iFanboy will be in full force. All three of us are going, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. Even
Jimski.
Jimski's going. We just announced that Jimski's going.
So, I got used to not going to console, Josh, last year.
I know, yeah. It was real nice.
Oh, there was an undertone to that, by the way.
Josh got a weekend pass, so it should be fun.
I'm fun at cons.
Yeah.
So. Do you think we can get Ennis to come to our booth?
Yeah, maybe.
For an interview?
He's not interested.
So yes, so we will be at C2E2 and we will have a booth there, so we'll be posting more information as we get closer to the show.
Right.
Cool. So Ultimate Spider-Man number 153 started the whole Death of Spider-Man prelude.
Yeah,
I love this book.
Fantastic. You know what I loved about this book?
Everything.
Black Cat takes her wig off and she's got short dark hair and it's cute.
It's Catwoman.
Yeah, exactly.
Hot is what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
And I actually like the way they colored the suit to make it look like a shiny leather. I mean, that was something that really stood out to me, is that it looked like it had that texture of leather.
Yeah.
I like that.
But overall, I think this is a book that we talk about, it doesn't get the notice it should.
Yeah.
It's been 153 issues and it's still as good as it was when it started.
I hope that when they're done with this whole Death of Spider-Man thing, it's still around. Like, I hope this isn't, you know, I'm sure it will be, but it's one of the best things Marvel does. And now it's at the point where they don't tell us who, and I don't even know who's doing what between La Fuente and Pacelli, but I don't care.
It's pretty obvious.
They're totally different styles.
I think
the Mysterio and Black Cat is Pacelli.
Right. No, but with
Tony and they both.
I misspoke. What I meant was, as opposed to in Brightest Day, when I'm kind of obsessed and I want to know what artist is doing what section, I don't care anymore. It just goes. It flows.
You know, can I say something?
Yeah.
Do not misspeak anymore.
Yeah.
Sarah Pacelli's fucking amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
She's and don't get me wrong. I mean, that page of all the armors, like La Fuente kills it.
Yeah.
But when you like, I'm those Pacelli pages, I'm like, God, she's good.
Yep.
Like crazy good. That last page, awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. And I liked all the Peter Tony stuff in here. Yep. This is like put those two guys in a room and he's just doing it for his girlfriend. And he's like, I don't know, we're here. Let's just talk, whatever.
I don't know why I'm doing this.
Great. Great stuff. Also great was Flash number 9.
Yes.
This is what I'm talking about with the Flash.
The best issue in a while.
This was awesome. This everything about it was perfect. Like, yes. The art was great. It's the first issue of the story arc, and we got, you know, it gives a good setup. We know what's happening. There's a, you know, it's working in the crime aspect. You've got the whole Flash family aspect. You got somebody from the future. There's a big reveal at the end. It's everything I want out of a Flash comic book. Perfect.
And gorgeous.
Yeah. This is probably my pick of the week, to be honest.
My pick of the week was Batgirl 18, which was an early contender for issue of the year. I'm going to have to put a pin in this this year.
Is this your pick of the week?
Yes, it was my pick of the week. Last issue was the one shot with Damian. This is a one shot with Clary and the Witch Boy. Mm-hmm. And if you remember him at all, he's a little poncy, pilgrim-dressed witch boy.
You know, I picked it up. I was going to buy it, and then I was like, oh, fucking Clarion. Who's been fun before? But I just was like, no, that's not what I wanted right now.
It was very funny. It was funny at least 3 or 4 times, and just gorgeous art. They go into his world for a while. Dustin Gwynn's art changes from pencils to painted style, and they go back to it. It's just a wonderful one-shot. So again, if you liked the one-shot with Damian, or you didn't even pick that one up, pick up 18. You need nothing to read it. It's just a one-shot story. It's fantastic.
Starborn number 3. I just love this series.
Isn't it?
It's just fantastic.
So good.
It's so and with this, what I love is when they play with the art and like that 2-page spread of the robots in the world as he imagined it, and then as the guy that he ripped off imagined it, and with like the distressed look on it, like the dot pitch stuff looked great. I love the addition of the, like, he gets a weapon with the gauntlet, and like that was cool, and like it's good science fiction. It's good, clever science fiction.
It's totally standard. Like, yeah. There's nothing being broken here, but it doesn't matter because it's really well done, so it's fun.
So Jason Aaron delivers again, possibly what might be one of the best single issues of a Wolverine story ever.
I knew you were going to love this. I saw them all standing around in the party in their costumes, and I was like, Ron's going to love this.
This was fantastic, and the art was awesome. I love the artist. Jeff DePaolo.
He really gets Wolverine,
yes.
Jason Aaron.
Yeah, he does.
I really like his characterization of Wolverine. This was a great issue. I love the bone gun, and the creepy cannibals who carved guns out of bones that shot teeth.
Yep.
From top to bottom, this was great.
Yeah, it was great to see all the various Marvel heroes. Basically, so Wolverine's girlfriend plans. She finds out she's a reporter. She does some research and she finds out Wolverine's actual birthday. So she plans a surprise party, invites all of his friends, and it's wacky. And Deadpool shows
plus
up.
Plus Deadpool.
And it's great. Everyone's in costume. This is how the Marvel Universe should be.
Having a book like Wolverine be that good is like all of a sudden being like, the Kings of Leon have just totally redefined rock. You know, like it just doesn't make sense. Like your indie sensibilities, like, oh, Wolverine book's just the, but it's real good, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
That was an analogy that just fell to hell, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
what I'm saying.
Let it hang there. So Widowmaker number four, so that ended. Like it just kind of ended abruptly. Like it was just like they just drove away.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's going to have some ramifications spilling into the Hawkeye miniseries that's coming up, the Blindspot miniseries.
I enjoyed this overall, Widowmaker. Yeah. I liked quite a bit. There's something about it. I can't put my finger on. Like, I don't necessarily like all the characters. Like, I like Hawkeye, I like Mockingbird, I like Black Widow. I don't really care about the other characters.
Well, part of the problem I had was just the bouncing McCann. I mean,
and the tone changes wildly.
Exactly. Like, it works as a crossover, but when you make it into a miniseries, it just seemed inconsistent.
Should have co-written it together.
What was wrong with Alexei's mustache?
What was wrong with a lot of things?
It's a weird mustache. Yeah. Is what I'm saying. Real quick, I just wanted to mention 27 number 3. I'm really enjoying this. I liked it even more this time. He goes and he meets, quote-unquote, Jim Morrison. I liked all the numerology of it and how nicely it all sort of fits together mathematically, and it's fun, and I don't really know what's going to happen, and at first, like, I know that, like, the mysticism of it was kind of strange and off-putting, but it's fun. I really like the interaction between the student and the guitar player. I don't know anyone's name.
I don't know. Does this series continue? I mean, I read it, but it's like, meh. I don't know. It's not what I wanted it to be. Too bad.
I really liked it. This is my favorite issue so far.
All right, you think I would love it, but I'm not. But I'm not loving it. I don't know why. Oh well.
Why don't you use the weird one?
So go to ifanboy.com/comics and you can see all the comics that came out this week, and you can rate and review your books and write reviews, and we'd love to hear what you think of the various comics out there. And I'm going to highlight a couple of reviews from the iFan base, and the first one's from Resurrection Flan, who reviewed Black Panther, Man Without Fear, number 515, and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And at the time of us recording it, less than 1% of you made it your pick of the week. In fact, 0.13% of you made it pick of the week. And Resurrection Flan says, I'm really enjoying the series. I only read 2 Shadowland issues, the Thunderbolts tie-in and the Elektra one-shot. Either way, the first issue set up pretty much everything you need to know. This is really just a fun and entertaining street-level superhero comic. Luke Cage seems to drop in each issue to bust, I can't pronounce the name, Unquo Chops, Black Panther, and his relationship with the people in his neighborhood reminds me a lot of Ennis and Dillon's original Marvel Knights Punisher series in a good way. And that's actually really good. That's a really good commentary on it. I think, am I the only one reading this?
Yeah, but that would sell me on it more.
But I think what should sell you on it is Princess. Frank Avila is killing it on art. Killing it. I mean, like, and this issue was probably the best issue from an art. Like, you know how when an artist comes on a title and sometimes it takes a couple issues before they hit their stride?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. This was the issue where he hit his stride. Like, and I would almost say, like, you know, Josh, go back to the store and don't buy it, but flip through it. And
don't, whatever happens, don't pay for it.
Well, no,
don't buy it.
I mean,
do not buy it.
No, I mean, if you want to buy it, you know, I mean, please buy
it. Slip it in your pants, walk out, don't make eye contact.
But I'm just saying, really good dynamic layouts, really good art. My only criticism, my only problem is that for whatever reason, Joe Caramagna is using a really small font size. And like to the point where it's like, I have really good eyesight, and I'm like, oh, that's small text. So
I like that you said that kind of thing. And I have really good eyesight. That's like something someone in the 50s would say, like in a movie.
Yeah.
Out of the way, I have really good eyesight. Like the
guy. But what's interesting is that smaller font size makes it look unique. Like this looks like no other Marvel comic I'm reading right now. Like it looks really, it looks very, very unique, and it's in its own little world, and it's actually really, really good.
I like that.
The Hosh reviewed Little Depressed Boy, number one. That's L-I-L. Little Depressed Boy, number one. Give the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And the pick of the week percentage was 3%, which is pretty high for an indie book.
And that might be wrong. That's a 0%. That's my mistake.
What is it?
No one voted that for the thing.
0%. All right.
Yeah, I was going to say 3%. I mean, they should. It's a fun book, but yeah.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, nothing against it.
I mean, trying to highlight it here, but let's not. Yeah. Let's not go out of control.
Yeah. All right, the Hosh says, this book is dripping with charm. We've all gone through that introverted time in our lives, and Steven Strubble and Cinna Grace captured in Little Depressed Boy. It's wonderfully paced and completely familiar. If you like movies like 500 Days of Summer, you'll like this book.
It should be noted that Stina Grace, the guy who did this book, that's it's Robert Kirkman's editor. He's the guy who keeps those things going. Yeah. And this is from Image. And it, by the way, it's not like, oh, if you like Walking Dead, read this. That's
no,
not
well,
what we're saying.
This was a webcomic, and it's been a webcomic since like 05. Steven Strubel's been doing it. And Cena did the art for it for some time period. Some other artists have done art for it. But now this is the webcomic making the jump to print comic.
It's all colored. Yeah. It's black and white.
Yeah, exactly. So it's fun. It's a fun book, but it's definitely not nothing. No zombies. It's music and emo and stuff like that. Yeah, but
The description's really good, and I think it's one of those things that people want to check out.
Yeah, definitely. Cena's art. I was surprised. I didn't know he could draw. I was like, oh, cool.
Audible.com is sponsored this episode of iFanboy. Did you guys know that?
I did.
It was in the script.
Yeah,
I should hope so. Yeah. I saw it.
I sold it. So yeah.
Audible's the place for audio.
I've been here the whole time.
This is a nice place that banter's never gone before. Yeah. Just outright like, yeah, what are you fucking, it's stupid? Come on. Audible is the place for audiobooks. You can download them to your iPod or any device, iPhone, iPad, as have an eye. It could possibly even go to some other devices, some devices I never even heard of. They have over 60,000 titles across all genres. By the way, there's a thing, if you order all of those and download all of them, there'll be a special gift too. It has to be all 60,000. I can't back that up. Go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy to sign up and get a free audiobook and a 14-day trial. I've been listening to an audiobook lately, and it's greatly helping my exercising. But a book that I'm reading right now is Ghost Soldiers by Hampton Sides. This has nothing to do with comics, but I'm really enjoying it. Hampton Sides is a guy who did that book about Kit Carson. I think I talked about one of these early ones, Blood and Thunder. And so I was like, I want to read more by this guy. And he did. It's a story about the guys in the Philippines in World War II who had to rescue all of the prisoners of the people, the victims of the Bataan Death March. And it's something I didn't know very much about. And he tells the story great. And I'm really into it. So Ghost Soldiers is my recommendation.
I feel like a guy named Hampton Sides should be writing a book about tough guys doing tough things.
Oh, he does. And he does it good.
He sounds like he's a tough guy.
Did you read Blood and Thunder? Listen to me, dude. Blood and Thunder.
I know you told me about it. I'm not saying I have got a lot of books I haven't read. I've got 13 books in my stack to read.
Do it. Do it.
All right. Fine. I'll make a note.
There you go.
Make a note.
All righty then. So go to Audible.
This week I've got to edit video shows. I got the pick of the week. I got the book of the month. How is this awful confluence all happening at the same time? But
awful.
It's good.
Seriously?
Well, no, it's just a lot of work.
It's just a lot of work. That's all. But it could be worse. You could be selling cars.
You could be on the Bataan Death March.
Yeah,
for God's sake.
You could be a real estate agent. You could be on the Bataan Death March.
Well, hold on about real estate. It could be.
Oh, just give me a break. Come on. Help
making
a guy
your own.
Out.
You're making your own hours.
Just
is what
me,
I'm saying.
Give me the leads.
It's fine. Book of the month is Star Wars: The Dark Empire trilogy. That was I paused for the colon by Tom Veitch, Cam Kennedy, and that other guy. Who's the other artist? I don't have the book with me. I'm not prepared. I do. It's right over there. Ron gave me this book as a gift, and it was a bit of a long shot because I knew
Jim
you must
Bikey.
Yeah, it was a weird pronunciation. I was like, I don't know how to say that. I know that you were thinking, I really think that Josh will like this, but I don't know if he'll read it. But I do know he will never ever buy it.
That's close. It was more I think he should have this, and maybe if he gets around to reading it, he'll find out he'll enjoy it.
Well, I read it very soon because it is a thing. Like I was a Star Wars guy. We're all Star Wars guys.
It's our religion.
It's turned into a different thing now, though.
Yep.
And there is too much by way of extended universe. And so if you ever get into a conversation with somebody about the extended, they'll start saying all this stuff. I'm like, oh, whoa. It's too much. Yeah. No, I don't want that. Now, I've read through the Zahn books. And even after that, I went a little too far. Like, I read a couple of the Tales of the Rogue Squadron. And I was like, I was too into that. And I was like, I got to stop this.
My world, Chewie never died.
When Chewie died. That was the last book I read. I probably read 20 or 30.
Yeah. Oh, I read. So I read the New Jedi Academy. I read the Rogue Squadron book. I read
the Rogue Squadron books were great.
They were awesome. There was a high point in the mid to late 90s when the expanded universe was awesome.
And this is before the films were re-released, obviously before the prequels. And really, they were like Star Wars for Star Wars. Yeah. You know, like.
Well, what's funny because when this issue, because I bought this in issues when it came out. I think Ron, you did too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Hell's yeah. Yeah.
This was the first thing along with the Zahn books, but really, I think it was this that was first that in the 90s when this came out, Star Wars was the thing that occasionally got showed on cable.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Star Wars was totally underground. Like that,
it was dead by that
like,
point.
I remember in like my Empire Strikes belt buckle in 1993 was novelty. Yeah. It was like retro, and it was like and it was embraced by the underground. It was like a lot of like us sci-fi nerds and things like that, but also like in the music scene I was in, it was like embraced through there. But everyone else, it was just something that happened, and it was this phenomenon, but it wasn't the force it is now. It was like even with Lucasfilm, like they had moved on. They were doing Young Indiana Jones.
Sci-fi people, Star Trek was the thing back then. Yeah, it was. Totally. Star Wars was really low on the totem pole. When this came out, it was like, oh, yeah, remember how awesome Star Wars was?
Oh, yeah.
And then the Vaughn books, and this sort of exploded from there. But this was the first step in a long road that we were still on the road.
I remember getting this book and then reading the Zahn books and not believing that they existed. Like, I didn't understand how they got away with it.
Well, so in college, I read through the Zahn books. And I think one of my roommates, or the Van Neel, he said, oh, you got to read these. So I read through them all. And like, it was like, wow. It was the same thing that Ron said. Like, I was like, oh, I got that feeling back. Like, I felt like, and definitely not the feeling that you got in any of the prequels. It was, you know, like, because it was a movement forward, and it was produced mostly for the people who were older, you know, and got not like super adult stuff, but it wasn't regressive in the way that a lot of the stuff now has been, which is done for kids, which is, you know, fair play, whatever, but it's not necessarily for me. And I never really went, I read a couple of the comics, you know, like I've read some of the Star Wars ongoing, and it was okay and fine. But these, I think because they came out when they did, I was really just surprised to see how much I was enjoying it. And it's not rocket science. It's not, you know, it's written definitely in an earlier style. It's lots of exposition. Everybody's making sure to say everybody's name as much as possible. But it was an expansion of the world in such a way that I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
Like they went to other worlds and they met other bounty hunters, and there were a bunch of other ships, and there was other Jedis, and they really like took the ball and ran with it to an extent. Like I surprised me with some of the stuff. There was that one Jedi that they found who was like an egg shaped dude in a robot body, and he has a really weird name, like Yava Toga Yogos or something like that. And I was like, that's nuts. And there's the crazy old, you know, lady Vima Debona. the Jedi lady.
Viva Devota. You belong with us in the stars.
Just crazy stuff that you know you wouldn't have seen, you know, you wouldn't see in a movie now.
Yeah. What's great about this book is one of the best moments of my childhood was when they're bringing back Boba Fett.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I didn't die in a Sarlacc.
What are you crazy?
I killed it.
The best thing about this book was the undefeatable commando team of Wedge Antilles and Lando Calrissian.
Yep.
You send them, when you want some shit done, you send the two generals.
You said the only dude to survive all three battles of the original trilogy.
So. Hero of the Rebellion is what he is. Yep. And I like that like they went to it's called the Dark Empire. Like they put Luke in a dark place. Yeah, they were like, You're gonna go study with the Emperor. Really?
Yeah.
You can do that? And I was like, no, don't do that. Like, and I was thinking, no, don't do that. The real standout though, the thing that really sold it, because all that's well and good, but the thing was the whole time, and I talked to Connor about this, the art is fantastic. The Cam Kennedy stuff specifically, like
it is gorgeous.
It's amazing. And the whole thing is colored in this almost monochromatic palette where they just sort of went with one color on each page. A lot of times it's like a sickly green when it's dealing with the dark side. And it was such
a style that you would not expect in this kind of book.
Exactly. You would think it would be all sort of bold four colors, you know, done a different way. But it was almost this indie. It looked like a Vertigo book is what it looked like. Yeah. From that time period, it was, and that part was great. You know,
to hell, it's really nice.
Yeah, I remember getting that book, and at the time, it looked unlike any other book that I was reading at the time, and I was like, oh, this is really cool.
Yeah, and I could see, you know, a lot of kids looking at it, and being big comic fans, especially in the 90s at that point, and just being like, ah,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, this came out the same time as the Image. I mean, this is totally contrary to what was coming out. Huh. And we should mention this is the Dark Empire trilogy collection. There's three miniseries in here. I think. You know, the first one is the best. The second and the third are not as good for various reasons, but I think,
But it's still a page turn.
Yes, absolutely. But just the first miniseries on the whole is just I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's, so this is this weird sort of stylistic thing that's going on with the art. But at the same time, like all the ships and all the stuff is all rendered really well. You know, it's the stuff you recognize and it's kind of fun. I don't like the way they do lightsabers, but besides that, I had a ton of fun reading it, and I plowed through it, and I was like, and it just gave me that feeling back, and I was like, that's great, that's a good time. I missed that
success.
Yeah, no, totally. So it was fun, and it was very easy to write about too, because that art, man, I think it's the first time I've done a book of the month where I was like, I'm leading with the art because it's the one thing. And even when the other artist is not as good, but it works, and they didn't try to copy. They didn't try to do the same thing because that would have been a bad idea.
Right.
Other than that, they had the sort of pegged poofy pants of the period. But that's besides that, it's totally fine. Yeah. Leia had silly pants.
Unrelated to the book, but to Star Wars, did you catch earlier this week when Gabe Hardman was just randomly tweeting about Star Wars? Just like,
no.
Oh, it was great. Go back in his tweet stream. It was very funny. Yeah, so he was complaining about the scene at the end of the Tatooine scene when they pick C-3PO and R2 up out of the sand. He's like that shot always looked fake and awful, and I hated it. And then he's like I like how at the end when everyone's celebrating, Ackbar still just sighs and is resigned. Like he's like he had some really good, because he works in the movie business. So he had some really interesting kind of comments on Jedi. It was funny.
Well, the Mon Cal. Mon Cal was destroyed. They're fighting, and they're also
everyone's alive.
I know. Yeah, he's like this.
he's a burden.
I love Jedi.
He's like middle management Skull.
Jedi is underrated, I think,
the final sequence?
The little moments that Jedi gives you.
The third act, the third act
is wonderfully put together.
Yeah. Oh, I love the first act. I'll throw in the Jabba scene, like just when I've got 20 minutes to kill, I'll just throw that whole scene in. Like, I love that. The suspense when Luke's on the plank and the music and then R2 gets in place. Oh, it's great.
And at that point, Luke has Jedi pimp strut because he's totally confident.
Yeah.
I got my robe. What's up?
Yeah, we can talk about Star Wars for
now. I'm going to have to watch this.
I know. Fuck, that's what I'm doing right after this. All right, cool. So go to ifanboy.com and read Josh's book of the month, and I'm glad that you enjoyed your Christmas present, Josh. So, yay.
Thank you.
Jabba Nobada.
Oh, Salacious Crumb.
I like when that Gamorrean guard gets scared.
Yes!
They're all standing around being tough and everything. He drops out of the Sarlacc pit. He's like, straight, and he can't get out. He knows he's after.
Can I tell you the Sarlacc caretaker crying after Rancor. Yeah, the Rancor caretaker crying has stuck with me as a kid for years.
Malakili.
Yeah, Malakili.
Tales of Jabba's Palace.
Yeah, oh, so good. So good. Anyway, so go to ifanboy.com, read Josh's Book of the Month review. We're going to skip the emails and voicemails this week, but if you have any questions you want to write in or call in, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call in at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. iFanboy, don't miss Rises from the Ashes. And on Monday, we'll have a new episode for you of the our other podcast that you can go subscribe to in iTunes. And this week, we're going to be talking to Dan Slott about The Amazing Spider-Man number 654.1. The big reveal of Venom, the new Venom. So it's going to be very interesting to hear what Dan had to say about that. But it should be a good time. So go to ifanboy.com on Monday and listen to Don't Miss and subscribe to it on iTunes if you haven't yet already. And I know a bunch of you haven't and you're missing out. I'm telling you.
It's true. At ifanboy.com, you should go there because the podcasts are only part of what we do. We also spend a lot of time and effort trying to make the best comic book site on the web. With all sorts of interesting things to talk about, from news to commentary to occasionally somebody spoils something really bad about Venom. and you got to put that up there too as it's happening. So you can go there, you can read the Pick of the Week review and all that stuff. You can read all those user reviews. Everything is a ton of stuff there. Word Balloon podcast and great stuff. And the video show. Last week was Inside DC Part 1. Great show. Very much fun. And there's another part coming up. And I get to talk to somebody I've always wanted to talk to. See, I hadn't always wanted to talk to the Matt guy, but I really was happy to talk to him. And now I was also happy to talk to the person I did always want to talk to. So that was vague.
Very confusing.
No, but I think, and also people are going to see one of my lifelong comic dreams come true in the second part. Connor knows what I'm talking about, right?
I do, and I know how I remember almost ruining it. Oops.
Good times. Don't let publishers us in your office. That's the last.
I'm a big guy. I keep nothing over and I move.
Sorry. I didn't know that was important.
I didn't realize it was so flimsy.
So, like I mentioned, if you have any questions, email us at contact@fanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS.
People are like, did he hurt Jim Lee?
He's very small. I didn't see him there.
I didn't do that.
Write us an email on iTunes for this show, for the Don't Miss show, for the video show. Please, it helps people find the show. Tell your friends. Tell your bounty hunter friends. Tell the ones who perhaps are chasing that no good smuggler from Corellia.
Because she's holding a thermal detonator.
That's an awful secret.
I can't do it. Oh, I love it so
scrape,
much.
Scrape, 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 scrape.
You're going to die here, you know.
I'm getting better. Instead of a big dark blur, just a big light blur.
Boba Fett. there. Boba Fett.
Oh, I love that scene.
Worst death ever.
Oh, Lando. On our way. On our way. When they take off.
Talking of
higher. Aim higher.
It's just the chaos of that scene is fantastic.
It's a great chaotic scene.
So
yeah.
Good. So good.
Did nobody, was it anybody like, hey George, yeah. Nine Numb is a vagina. Yeah, well, look at him.
Badge face, as we call them.
Badge face.
I still love the, and it's not in the movie, but it's in the Lego game. And when you play Lego Star Wars and Return of the Jedi, with the scene with every time Lando does anything and the ship goes down. Like Lando touches the controls and the ship goes like in a tailspin, and then Nen Nub fixes it. And then Lando just goes to touch something again and Nen Nub just shakes his head. Like it's
Land up drunk again.
Oh, God. Oh, Lando, you belong here amongst the clouds. Man, that was a good movie.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to watch it now.
Do we have other stuff left to talk about?
No, here? I don't think. Let's just talk about Star Wars for a little longer. Oh, God. All right. Well, I'm going to go watch Jedi now. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I was trying to think of some strange voice from Star
I'm
Wars.
I'm IG-88.
I fell out. I don't like you either.
Empire. He wasn't in
IG-88 was scary as fuck is what he was.
Really? Ish. You thought he was the scariest of them all?
You never played the video game.
True. No, I did play the video, yeah.
That one? I couldn't get past him. I had to stop.
Dengar always freaked me out. Because
he was
like,
covered in bandages.
Yeah, I'm like, he's a badass? He looks like he's fat.
He's
like,
yeah.
There's the one guy what made a gas. Zuckus.
Oh, yeah. Zuckus, yeah.
Zuckus
right,
is a
yeah.
gas being, and Forlom is his evil droid.
Yep.
You know who was mean? Who? EV-99.
Oh yeah, in Jabba's palace, yeah.
Yeah. She was a bitch.
She was a bitch, yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Wasn't she branding droids?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Joyously.
The big droid from Star Wars was getting
Gonk
his feet
droid.
Branded. Yeah, Gonk, yeah. Gonk. Gonk.
I don't think the Jawa is in there that does it, but there's a Jawa in A New Hope where he says something. Owen says something to him, and he just throws up his arms. Wah!
Yeah. What too?
Did you know that they communicate by smell? I know that you guys both know that.
Yes. Yeah.
Pheromones.
Yep.
Yeah. Guys on the subway do that.
So they're Jawas then on the subway.
Yeah. Must be.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.